Tuesday, March 8th. And we've got several bills up today, and I'd like to get our first two bills up, which would be $28.75 and $3,006. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill $28.75. Representative Shetterly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you going to open up the next one first before you take other testimony to get Representative Smith out?
I think what I'll do is I'll recess this hearing and...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Lane, there's nobody... for the record, my name is Lane Shetterly, State Representative, District 34. I'm pleased to bring you House Bill 2875, which I have introduced at the request of a constituent of mine, Mr. Leslie Melville. Mr. Melville is in the room today and I think is probably more articulate on the issue presented by this bill than I, but I think what it gets down to is the extent of regulatory and licensing requirements by CCB extending into a situation where you have a property owner who may contract with a licensed builder, licensed contractor to build a home or homes for resale. And under current law, the requirement then that that property owner be registered and licensed as a contractor with CCB, even if that property owner never touches a hammer or a screwdriver on the project. Mr. Melville has some personal perspective on this, and I will be pleased to commend his testimony to you. I appreciate your hearing this bill today, and with that, Mr. Chair, I will take my leave. I've got my own committee to get to here shortly, but I'd be happy to answer a question if there's one or two.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much, Representative Shetterly.
Thank you very much, sir.
With that, I'm going to recess the hearing on House Bill 2875 so that we can go to a hearing on 3006. And Representative Tootie Smith, you want to come with?
Mr. Chairman, this is House Bill 3006, involves wood cutting, and it increases the ceiling from $25 to $75 per cord for liability limitation of property owners who allow public use of their land for wood cutting.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This is a fairly simple bill, and it's a good bill. In the past, and oh, by the way, the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, at their request, I'm bringing this forward, sponsoring the bill. I'm also a member of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. And I think I know something about which we talk, because I'm also a Christmas tree farmer and landowner and owner of a logging company. So what this bill does, it just increases the liability of which a landowner can be sued of $20 a cord to $75 a cord. Currently, if somebody goes onto my land, for instance, if I had a timber patch, and I allowed the wood cutting on it, and they got hurt, and they were cut by their own saw, for instance, slipped, or they fell down and hit their head, technically they could sue me even though I allowed them permission. I gave them a good service to come on my land. And it raises the ceiling on what I can charge without a liability limit, from $20 to $75. I must say $75 is very conservative in this day and age of what energy prices are doing. It's a good idea because we do have an energy crisis, as you know. And I think more people are going to be buying wood stoves again, even though there's some argument with EPA and DEQ about the clean air. Our wood stoves are very clean producers anymore. And therefore, I think we'll have an increased use of wood. The cost of U-cut wood today fluctuates with the market. I think it's probably going up. In some cases, it may even be higher than $75 per cord. I know of an instance where it is, just because we happen to be in the business. And I think it's also a reasonable accommodation to the public by the generosity of our private landowners. Private landowners don't have to open up their farms to do this. They do it for many benefits. One is to maybe clean up a logging site, and that wood can be put to good to good use, excuse me. Another one is just allowing a friend to come on so they can heat their home with wood. It's as simple as that. So with that in mind, I'm going to turn it over to Christine McNitt. Mr. Chair, is that all right?
It is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, which is a statewide grassroots membership association of family forest land owners who have 5,000 acres or less. I'd like to thank Representative T.D. Smith for sponsoring this bill for us. Under current law, ORS 105676 actually declares it a public policy of the state of Oregon to encourage owners of land to make their land available to the public for recreational purposes, for wood cutting, and for the harvest of special forest products by limiting their liabilities towards persons entering thereon for such purposes. Following ORS 105682 provides that an owner of land is not liable in contract or tort for any personal injury, death, or property damage that arises out of the use of the land for these specific purposes. When the landowner either directly or indirectly permits any person to use the land for recreation, wood cutting, or the harvest of special wood products. However, this immunity applies only under three circumstances. One, if the owner makes no charge for permission to use the land. Two, if the owner transfers an easement to a public body to use the land. Or three, what this bill gets to, the owner charges no more than $20 per cord of wood to use the land for wood cutting. House Bill 3006 proposes to raise that limit from the current $20 to $75. Section 2 of the bill applies this change to causes of action arising on or after the effective date of this act, and I encourage the committee to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Representative Backman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Christina, I note that the $20 limit, or this ORS, was apparently passed in the 1995 legislature. Do you have any idea the history of why it was $20 then?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not sure it was passed in 1995. For some reason, I thought it was in 1979, but I could be wrong about that. As far as the history, I wouldn't know. I would suppose that if it was in the 70s, that more accurately reflected a cost of a cord of wood, whereas today a cord of U-cut wood is more along the lines of $85.
Mm-hmm. We also have an amendment for emergency clause. I assume you're in favor of the amendment. Yes.
Mr. Chair, members, there would be no opposition to that.
Any other questions from the committee? No? No? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Would you prefer to carry your bill or do you want to put it on the consent calendar? Okay.
If you think it can go on the consent calendar without opposition, we'll, in the interest of saving time, consent calendar.
Okay. We will see. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 3006? Hearing and seeing no one else, we will close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 3006.
Mr. Chair.
Oh. Representative Wilson.
I'd move House Bill 30-06 to the floor. Where should pass right?
Would you be willing to move this gun? would you be willing to move the dash ones first? In your packet, probably today.
Wow, really? Yeah, I'd be willing to move the dash ones first.
Representative Wilson moves the dash ones to House Bill 3006. Is there any objection?
Could I just ask a question?
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The effect of adding an emergency clause would just have this take effect sooner, but it still wouldn't affect litigation that had already been started or anything that arose before the date it takes effect. Am I correct in that?
That is my belief. However, I'm not an attorney. Mr. Stembridge, do you see
Mr. Stembridge is not an attorney either, but I would say this. On line 17 and 18 of the bill, you'll see it applies only to causes of action arising on or after the effective date of this 2001 Act, so it would not affect any action that had been filed prior to the effective date of this Act.
Any objection to the amendment? Hearing and seeing none.
The amendment is adopted.
All right, Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 30-06 to the floor with a as amended, with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wilson moves House Bill 3006 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Representative Leonard.
I would only point out that it was also Representative Wilson from last session said, God, we've got some guns on the floor. He has a fixation with guns.
We can request counseling for Representative Wilson another day.
Thank you.
Here it comes now.
We are currently ready to go to a vote on House Bill 3006 as amended.
I was missing some of you.
And if there is no further discussion, clerk will call the roll.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Oh. Okay. Oh, did you ask me? Oh, I'm first out of the box today, but I'm coming at the end of the alphabet. All right. Aye. Aye. Thank you.
Aye.
I heard all this. Aye.
Backlund.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Murphy.
Aye.
Nelson.
Excuse.
No.
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, House Bill 3006 is declared passed. And I would entertain a consent calendar motion if the committee so chooses.
I'm going to shoot again. Yeah. It's your turn to reload.
No.
No?
So moved.
Sure. Representative Zahner has moved that we place House Bill 3006 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. I'm going to close the work session. We're going to reopen our hearing on House Bill 2875, and we have... There he is. Please come forward, Mr. Melville.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Leslie Melville from Philomathon, Oregon, and I thank you for your kindness in hearing this matter. The bill has been introduced by Representative Shetterly at my request. The purpose is very simple. It's to eliminate an unreasonable and redundant burden now placed upon an unsuspecting individual in the normal course of a thoroughly legitimate business. Presently, in order to hire a general contractor, the law requires one to be a general contractor. As unbelievable as that sounds. If you want to build, refurbish, renovate, or remodel a dwelling for the purpose of selling that building, it creates the ridiculous situation I've just described. You must be a general contractor to hire a general contractor. Nobody believed that that situation existed, including some lawyers. In an answer to a question regarding this situation, the CCB, that's the Construction Contractors Board, responded that the CCB licensing program was created to provide persons contracting to have a structure built or improved or to buy a new structure or part of a structure, such as a condominium, a construction dispute resolution process. The Construction Contractors Board does not require construction contracting licensee to demonstrate any technical competence. Therein lies the problem. Absent a requirement for technical competence, problems are inevitable. Apparently, the Construction Contractors Board has anticipated this, and rather than addressing the problem, chooses to cast an unnecessary loop into the whole process and added another layer of bureaucratic redundancy. The CCB has observed that in a development, the purchaser contracts with the developer, not with the builder, and the purchaser would need to be able to file a claim against the developer, who may in turn file a claim against the contractor. Certainly this can be done. That's what the civil courts are for. And the CCB makes a further observation that without the requirement that a developer who sells the structure be a licensed contractor, the existing dispute resolution mechanism would not work. Well, let's change the system so it will work. Adding to the problem also stems from the Construction Contractors Board's interpretation of who is and who is not a building contractor. This misinterpretation and their reluctance to address the matter of competence is at the root of the problem. If I, as a developer, wish to build a certain number of homes, I ought to be able to hire a licensed building contractor who is competent. And it should be the responsibility of the licensing authority to ensure that an individual is competent before he is licensed. In Oregon, if you wish to practice as a doctor, you're required to demonstrate your competence as a doctor. If you wish to practice as a lawyer, you're required to demonstrate your competence as a lawyer. This doesn't mean that everybody is a genius at his chosen profession. It merely means that the state is requiring a demonstration of competence before issuing a license. And if the CCB abrogates the responsibility of requiring the demonstration of competence, then what's the purpose of issuing a license? They choose merely to function as a board of arbitration between dissatisfied customers and a third party. If that is all they do, let us rename them, reorganize them, or just get rid of them and save the taxpayers a bundle. The number of dissatisfied customers would be considerably diminished if the CCB were to concentrate on doing what they should, namely requiring a level of technical competence before licensing an individual as a building contractor. When somebody represents themselves to me as being a licensee of the state of Oregon, I have a right to expect that to obtain the license, the licensee has demonstrated a level of competence. Inherent in that license is the public's expectation of competence. Absent that, it's a farce. It is ridiculous for me to be required to be a general contractor in order to hire a general contractor. Alan Earlean, whom some of you know, a constituent of Senator Harper's, sent him a message. It is succinct and eloquently describes the problem. The message reads, "Steve, this is absurd and needs a legislative fix. We hire contractors. Why would we want to be one? The board needs to put an end to their convoluted reasoning, and the contractors and opponents of the bill who are here today essentially at the behest of the board need to acknowledge two things. One, consumer protection is best served by competent craftsmen producing a quality product. Two, any individual should have the right to develop property or to remodel property for sale, provided they hire a technically competent licensee to do the work. And built into the system should be a simple, comprehensive, and sensible system of dispute resolution that would involve the developer and the general contractor, with the courts being available as final arbiters of the dispute. Therefore, I ask for a yes vote, and again, I thank you for the courtesy of your hearing this. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Nava?
And maybe we're going to have other witnesses.
Oh, we, indeed we are. We have at least four or five more scheduled.
I have a question that's on the mind, but it's something that is best for you to answer somebody else. I'm just wondering if you build a house on a piece of property,
yes, sir,
as the owner of the property, and under the bill that you're proposing, you're not the contractor, somebody else is, and you build it to resell it, somebody buys that house, and they have some problem with it, would you be able to say, I'm not the contractor in that instance?
Not really. Not really. Because you, while you were not the general contractor, you were the seller of the property to the individual.
Right.
So you would be responsible to that individual for selling him whatever you did.
That's the part I'm not sure about. So
I'm sure we're going to have further testimony
okay
on that.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
At this time, I want to ask how many people are here to testify in House Bill 2672, dealing with child care. Anybody? No? Okay. You have to leave at 1:30?
Excuse me, 2:30.
2:30, okay. We're in decent shape then,
yeah,
a little bit. Okay. In that case, we'll just keep going down the list for House Bill 2875. Ken? Cadell? Cadell, why don't you come on up?
This is the chair of the board.
Sydney Brewster, you want to come with? Ken, you probably thought you should have retired a little earlier, but nonetheless, you're back again.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Cadell, administrator of the Construction Contractors Board, and here today on one of those things that we seldom do, but occasionally we have to testify in opposition to a bill. I have with me our board chair. This bill is important. What it would do to protection of consumers is so important. I ask our chair, Sydney Brewster, She's here to give you testimony on this bill.
Chair Canope and members of the committee, I'm Sydney Brewster. I'm the chair of the Construction Contractors Board. I've brought written testimony, and I would refer you to that for some statistics that support our opposition to this bill. Mr. Melville gave me a good example that maybe could help clarify. He said that if a doctor malpractices, or a doctor has to be qualified in the state, also if a doctor malpractices in a hospital, that victim of that malpractice can not only go after the doctor, but after the hospital. In this case, where the developer has contracted with a general contractor, that victim cannot go after that developer, cannot go after the umbrella of the project that damaged this consumer. Both, with all due respect, Representative Shetterly and Mr. Melville both characterize this as an extension into private business. On the contrary, this is a system that's been in operation for 30 years, protecting the consumers of Oregon. Oregon made the decision quite some time ago at the inception of the Builders Board to not go for competency, but to rather go for financial responsibility and providing the consumer with assurance that they would have some recourse in the event that they were damaged by someone in the construction industry. If this bill were to go into effect, what would happen is we would be depriving a minimum of 4,000 consumers a year of the protections afforded by the Contractors Board in the way of insurance, in the way of a bond in case the damages are not paid, and a no-cost dispute resolution process that is a great benefit to consumers and unique in the United States in what it provides for consumers. I would call your attention to the second page of my written testimony, where we detail the costs, the supposed costs and burden to the developer, and they are certainly minimal. If the developer wanted to become a contractor, the cost would only be a maximum of 26 hours of a person's time and about $880. We do now have a test that tests over business practices and knowledge of those laws and business practices that affect the construction industry, and that is the most burdensome requirement that the developer would have to fulfill. What would happen with this bill is it would be an end run around a very established legal theory, which is privity of contract. There has to be a relationship between the two people directly for someone to be able to sue that person for their damages. And so at this point, I think that's all I'm going to say to try to be brief, but I can't emphasize enough how damaging this would be to Oregon consumers.
Questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkley.
I confess to being mostly lost. The brief description of the bill says that a property owner would be exempt from being a contractor if they hire a general contractor. It seems from your description of your response that there's much more involved in this bill than that. Can you amplify the distinction between this brief summary and the point of view that you're coming from?
I can certainly try, Chair Canope and Representative Merkley. Let's just take a real-life example. Let's say that you decide that you are going to build a home on a piece of property that you own, and you're going to sell that as a spec home, and you're going to undertake to build that home. And you go out and you contract with someone to build that home, okay? Now, the contractor's finished with the job, and it's a miserable job. There are all kinds of problems with the house. Someone has purchased it, and they're living it, and they discover all the problems. The contractor's no longer on the scene. That person that purchased that home doesn't have the right, under this bill, would not have the right to go after you because you were not a licensed contractor through the claims process with the CCB. They would be deprived of that right. You would be exempt. Does that make sense to you? Have I described it correctly?
Okay. Let me mull it over for a while. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zoner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a problem. A contractor can get a bond. A private individual, could he go out and get a bond? The bond working, building that house, is that a problem?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I just had discussions about this last week with some bonding companies, and they do not want to provide bonds and will not actually underwrite them for private individuals in those circumstances. Very difficult to achieve.
Other questions? Thank you very much. Tim Thompson, Justice Department.
Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tim Thompson from the Department of Justice. We would echo the same concerns that the representatives of CCB have just given you. In terms of the existing public policy as represented in the administrative rules and Chapter 701, which CCB enforces, there's a huge premium, I guess, placed on the privity of contract between the person who is having a structure built or is purchasing and a contractor, and this bill would bypass that existing structure. Mr. Melville may have some interesting points, and there may be some duplication, but at least as the system now works and the statutes are now written, this would exempt developers from the claims process, which the state has invested a great deal in terms of developing CCB's sort of cost-free claims process. There may still be some civil action that would bypass CCB, perhaps, but at least in terms of the claims process that now exists, exempting developers would serve a detriment to the public and the consumer. So we would otherwise echo CCB's concerns.
Any questions from the committee? Okay, thank you.
We have the Oregon Remodelers Association, Matt Moritz and Linda Schaffman, is that right? Schaffman, close.
Afternoon, Vice Chairman's Honor, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matthew Moritz. I represent the Oregon Remodelers Association. I'm joined today by Linda Schaffman. She's the Executive Director of the Oregon Remodelers Association. We are here in opposition to House Bill 2875.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman's Honor, members of the committee. My name is Linda Schaffman. As Matthew said, I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Remodelers Association. The cornerstone of the system of regulating the construction industry is consumer protection. It's keeping those who offer construction services in exchange for compensation accountable to their clients. The beneficiaries of this bill would leave their clients outside the claims process and dispute resolution system of the Construction Contractors Board. This bill contravenes that system of accountability and consumer protection. I'll conclude by saying, if you're going to offer construction for sale, you should become a contractor. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question. In case of Mr. Melville, he'd have to get a license, but then he's still not a qualified, a construction contractor. That bothers me a little bit. Your licensing procedure may not be as strict as he would like. Can you comment on that?
Well, I'm a great believer in the system that we have here. We do ask contractors to provide some competency. They must pass a test. It's really not about competency, it's about accountability. Most people who put themselves out to be contractors really can build something. They aren't necessarily responsible and honest about what they do, some of them, about 1%. I don't have a problem at all with our current system of licensing in the state of Oregon.
Any questions? Nope. Thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to testify in House Bill 2875? Well, Mr. Berry.
Chair Canope, members of the committee, Scott Berry with the Oregon Building Industry Association. I don't have too much to add. I wasn't planning on testifying today, but I did just want to throw in our opposition to to this bill and concerns that have been voiced previously. I think Representative Leonard sort of hit the nail on the head with his question initially, and that's just it. Would the consumer be covered or not? That's something we're very concerned about, and if there's another way around that where ABC Construction, who is building a house for a private individual, could then be tied to the consumer, you know, maybe there's an answer there someplace. But in terms of the way this bill is written, we have concerns about the consumer being covered in any way, shape, or form under the CCB process.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2875? If not, Mr. Melville, I would encourage you to work with Representative Shetterly and see if there's anything you can do maybe to resolve some of these concerns.
I'm sure we can, Mr. Chairman, particularly with the Scott's area group.
Okay.
And I thank you. And if we could just keep the thing open, we'll work together and see if we can get it resolved.
Okay. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2875. And we'll go to House Bill 2672. I believe we brought this back mainly for work session. Is there anybody who wanted to testify in the public on this bill, House Bill 2672? Seeing none, I think we're going to go right to work session with this. And I'll open a work session on House Bill 2672.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2672 is the one that would require a child care division of the Employment Department to credit child care provider for study of child care training media as fulfillment of a registration renewal or training requirement. You may recall there were 8 hours of training required. House Bill 2672 allows basically self-reporting of that training. You have two amendments, Dash 1 and Dash 2. The Dash 1 requires self-documentation of the training. Both of these amendments were talked about during your previous session on the 20th of February, but we did not have the specific wording of the document at that time. The Dash 1s would require the self-documentation of the training, including the short outline of what was learned. The Dash 2s were suggested by the agency would require training documentation by a certificate from the training provider. Thanks.
Do we have a fiscal on this?
We have a fiscal on both the Dash 1 and the Dash 2. The Dash 2 was no fiscal. The Dash 1 was minimal fiscal. And that was telephoned. That information was telephoned to me late this morning. I don't know that we have the actual statement.
Okay.
And the reason for the minimal on the Dash 1 is that the agency felt that they would have to review the self-documentation when it came in. It wouldn't take much staff time, but it would take some staff time, thus the minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you. Any thoughts from the committee on the amendments?
Do we have to choose between one or the other?
Well, I
can
go. Representative Walker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I looked at my notes and I remember indicating that I wouldn't support this bill unless they were going to have their training notarized.
Notarized?
Yeah, I don't believe that's a hardship. If someone wants to be doing self-reporting, they can get it notarized that they are being truthful and honest about what they did.
I don't think we have an amendment before us that indicates that.
But I did raise the hearing and said that I would not bill unless that.
I believe I recall that. Representative Merkley.
I have a question to Senator King. How does getting notarized, other than making my statement of accurate statement on more on the record, how does it make it any more accurate?
Because you're saying under oath that what you are stating is true and correct. And I believe that's an element that needs to be there. I do it for my continuing education credit. I have to get it notarized.
Thank you for that clarification. Mm-hmm.
It really is a simple matter to do, and I just think it adds a little more credibility to the process rather than just saying, yeah, I read a book. I want you to say under oath that you read a book.
Mr. Chair, may I ask again, what was the reason for this bill? What the proponents were trying to avoid?
Mr. Chairman, I believe I can attempt an answer at that. There may be others who wish to clarify further. The current law requires 8 hours of training, and it says has completed, this is, I'm looking at page 2, line 4 of the bill, says has completed a minimum of 8 hours of training related to child care during the most recent certification period. I believe in administrative rules, the agency has defined what qualifies as that minimum 8 hours. This bill would allow a more informal completion of that training, studying videotapes, television programs, internet websites, reading materials, other types of training material related to child care. The amendment has to do with the documentation of that training.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, just say what I think, I guess. That this is a requirement that we passed last session,
right,
that really no one has had to meet yet, because it only takes effect on renewal. I think it was a 2-year period or something. I'm concerned that we're now trying to take a requirement that made sense at the time and weaken it. The language of the bill seems to open the way that I could say, you know, I watched the Lifetime channel on TV for this number of hours, and I'm not reassured really by either amendment that we're still not being that loose about what we're requiring people to do. I mean, if we had to choose between these two versions, at least the dash twos, which say that the documentation comes from the provider of the training, would mean that there was some link that it should be a legitimate source for training, not just that I wrote on a piece of paper that I watched, you know, videotapes. But I'm a bit concerned that that we haven't come up with language that really nails down what it is we want people to be doing. And I would be curious, I guess, if there is somebody here from the agency.
Representative Leonard.
I was on the committee in the session this initially was adopted. I think it was 1995. And prior to that, we had nothing. No training, no certification. As I recall, there was a series done by one of the local television stations that initiated this bill, Channel 6 or something like that. And it pointed out some of the problems of some of the daycare providers. And my feeling is, with that in context of what it was that we were trying to do, that the dash one amendments, for my purposes, accomplishes that. I'm Representative Backlund could probably speak to this better than I can, but my feeling is that if a person, if you have a, for instance, a student come back with an outline and the information that they were supposed to have gathered, you've accomplished what you wanted, because they then have learned the material. And if we have child care providers providing that, I'm comfortable that they've gained kind of knowledge and welcome to provide child care. But actually, what you're really looking for is good, competent, you know, wholesome people that you can't learn in any kind of a program. I mean, they have to be the right kind of people in the first place. But I could actually live with the dash one amendments, is what I'm saying. I think it gets to what it was, I think, the legislation originally tried to accomplish.
Well, Representative Leonard, how do you feel about the dash twos, which would require a certificate?
I just think it's a little much. It just strikes me as a little overkill. I mean, I could.
Anyone else? Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the dash twos, and I think if the individual, the child care provider, did the the various things that the original bill called for, then to have to go to the point that Dash 2 requires is, to quote, a bit much. And so I would be comfortable with that, with the Dash 1 amendments.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Leonard.
Remove the Dash 1 amendment.
Representative Leonard says move the Dash 1 amendments.
Yes,
thank you. Are there any objections? Representative Rosenbaum and Representative Walker note their objections for the record.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, I do note my objections.
Okay. Anyone else? Should we need to call for the roll call board? No. Okay. The Dash 1 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2672 as amended to the form of the do-pass recommendation.
Representative Leonard has moved House Bill 2672 as amended to the floor with the do-pass recommendation. Discussion?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I think I've made it clear what my position was, and I made it clear at the hearing, and the sponsor of the bill didn't talk to me about it, and I still feel pretty strongly about this. And the court administrator can provide them with the kind of form that we do. It's a little log, and then you just provide a document behind it saying you've been somewhere or what you did and get it notarized. It's pretty simple, but I think it holds people accountable. And one of the, I was looking at the testimony of Tom Wilson, the administrator for the child care division, and he said self-reporting is not reliable. I think adding that element of getting it notarized makes it a little more reliable and means people are taking it a little more seriously. So I'm a no.
Okay. And I appreciate the comment. I was licensed in insurance and securities in the early 90s, and I remember doing continuing ed, and I think what we had to provide at that time was the results of the test, and it was just sort of a self-reporting issue, and you had to send that in to the agency, and that seemed to work at the time, and maybe there are others who have a higher standard, certainly in your industry. They may. Anyone else?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkley.
I've been silently pondering this on this end of the bench, trying to frame it in terms of thinking about my own children and our reliance upon child care and particularly upon the pace with which knowledge about child development has changed, the understanding of how quickly their brains get wired and the type of stimulation and input they need to have and different ways that the provider is essential in doing this, things such as simple as it's really important to talk to the kids all day long or as much as possible as opposed to just having them sit in front of the video. I've actually seen child care settings that consisted of that, of a group of kids in the living room with a little bit of a partition to be in front of the videos. And it's probably useful to have this very important function, have a little bit of continuing education that's structured in a way by folks who are following the field and reminding people of how important this stuff is, right? Simply watching a program on TV, it may or may not be highly relevant, seems to me very minimalistic on a very important function. I guess I'm really speaking up now in favor of the amendment that we didn't adopt, Amendment 2. Not so much Vicki's point about is a person being honest, but more about the content of the material and recognizing how absolutely dependent our society is becoming upon child care, how much child care is a function of how our children are raised. So I don't know if anyone else is pondering the same things and it would like to switch amendments, but that would be my preferred.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leonard.
All due respect to my neighboring colleague from Portland, the original legislation doesn't require the kinds of things you would desire. The original legislation, I mean, as I'm reading it here, basically establishes some assurance to parents who find themselves in a position where single parents needed some child care so that they can do what they need to do, which is primarily hold down a job. And in the ideal world, I would agree with Representative Merkley that those are the goals we'd like to have our child care providers strive for, but the reality is oftentimes for a variety of reasons that our children are safe is the primary consideration when they're out of our immediate care, and I think that's what this bill is trying to do, is provide a safe environment for children. So, I mean, I don't disagree with what he's saying. It's just that the original legislation before this amendment didn't provide for those kinds of assurances that he spoke to.
Mr. Chair? Representative Backman? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at the idea of the training and the idea of reporting, I'm looking at some of my notes, and again, if you were that individual who wanted to be a child care provider or to be further trained, if you read something, you still would have to write an outline of not more than one page if it's reading material. That takes quite a bit of time. If it's a television program, you still have to write a short outline of what you learned from the television program, not more than one page. And I can go on. That same concept is that you would have to sit down and focus and concentrate for a certain amount of time and then write it. So you're looking at it, you're listening to it, and you're writing it, and that's three senses. And that's not too bad in terms of what you might retain from that training. So I think Representative Walker talked about self-reporting, and her point is well taken in terms of maybe an amendment could have been included that would have had notarized, but there is more than just saying, I watched it, and then sign your name. You're saying you watched it, but you're also saying what you watched. And so I think this isn't that bad.
Mr. Chair. Representative Zona.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding Representative Walker's notary, all a notary does, as I understand it, is notarizing that that's your signature. It has nothing to do with what the statement that person submits is false or true. All it is just taking the responsibility that I am notarizing that signature on that document belongs to that person. So that's, and I used to own a radio station, so we used to do a lot of those.
Right.
Representative Walker?
Yes, Representative Zahner. It would be notarizing if that's your signature, but it's your signature on the document that you are signing. And the document you would sign would have you attesting to the fact that what you are submitting is true and accurate and you have participated in these programs. So it's the signature on the document, and the document would be a little affidavit that you sign with it. So that is true, but it's the signature on what you're signing. So it isn't.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkley.
The I think the philosophy behind the word training was that people would be consulting with and somebody who is an expert or a teacher or referring to some type of coursework and so on and so forth. I'm quite sympathetic to this bill because it the bill notes there are many ways to receive that training, including websites and so forth. My concern, and this is where I disagree with my colleague who I have yet to persuade from outer southeast Portland, is that there was a notion of content in the original bill, and the clarification but here we're reducing training to almost anything. For example, if I say to the state that I have watched Little House on the Prairie and observed good childhood parenting, and I did it on Channel 12, and I learned that it's good to be consistent as a parent, that would appear to meet the standard of this
provision, but I don't think it would truly enhance my understanding of good childcare in the context of being family childcare providers. And that's why I'd like the context of the word training to actually involve a sense that you are learning important things, and 8 hours is a very minimal requirement. We had this testimony from the employment department that the training is available on evenings and weekends, and certainly training available through the internet would be appropriate. I think that would help address the person who brought the bill was noting how hard it is to get out to trainings, even if they are available on evenings and weekends. But somehow, even through an internet, you can get a certificate that you completed what was requested. And I just don't want us to take all the air out of the sense that child care providers are doing something incredibly important, and they should be paying a little bit of attention to how to do that well.
Yeah, I think what we're looking for is balance. I mean, they may have wanted to watch the show Emergency Plus Four, whatever it used to be, that had firefighters and EMTs, and maybe that would have, you know, been more realistic than Little House on the Prairie.
Careful,
we're getting into close territory there.
Yeah.
But what we're looking for, I think, is balance in what we're going to allow and the technologies that we're going to allow in terms of training. And it seems to me that this is reasonable. We'll clearly have the opportunity in 2 years to fix it. Maybe in 2 weeks we'll have the opportunity to fix it.
But Chair, I sense his vote's not going to be very balanced.
Balanced?
I don't think the vote's going to be very balanced.
I'm thinking of this balance.
The county here. And
yeah.
There's an unholy alliance beginning to occur.
Unholy?
I think if everybody's where they are now, the bill will pass out of committee today.
Right.
Anyone else?
Well, I think we moved a dash one amendment. We got that far?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you had Representative Jim Stearns, Representative Leonard moved do pass as amended.
So we've moved the bill.
You have a motion on the floor.
Indeed you do. Any other discussion? Seeing no one else, clerk will call the roll.
Walker. No. Wilson.
Aye.
Stoner?
Aye.
Batson?
Aye.
Lerner?
Aye. Merkley?
No.
Nelson?
Excuse.
Rosenbaum?
No.
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, apparently we will not be putting this on the consent calendar. We are going to assign Representative Close to carry the bill, as I believe she wished to do. I was going to sign Representative Walker, but I decided maybe I shouldn't do that.
I Representative Leonard might want to carry it.
And the vote was relatively balanced.
And Representative Close is the carrier. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2672. So we don't have any major questions.
You might want to schedule this. If you want to ask her testimony, I don't know. Morgan is not.
Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2012. Is there anyone here, by the way, to testify in 2225?
No. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2012. Creates a master builder certification program administered by the Department of Consumer Business Services or, at its option, a local government. It prescribes $22 application fee to authorizes building official of government having this master builder program to waive government performance of plan reviews or certain building inspections for work done by a certified master builder.
Thank you. Scott Barron. And Eric, is it Muir? Moyer?
Chair Canope, Representative, or members of the committee, my name is Scott Berry. I'm with the Oregon Building Industry Association, and with me today is Eric Moyer, who's the Executive Vice President of the Marion Polk Building Industry Association. House Bill 2012 creates a master builder program from a pilot program that's been running for 4 years in Marion County and the City of Salem. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Moyer, and he can talk about some of the history and some other things.
Thank you, Scott. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, a number of years ago in the middle 70s, we sought a way to get builders a little bit more formalized education. And we sought that for two purposes. One, so they would be better equipped, and two, so that they could advertise that fact that they had gone out on their own and achieved a higher level of education. So we, at that time, brought together some folks who thought perhaps we could create a master builder program or a program that used that kind of terminology. About that time, we were talking with our local building official and discussed with them the opportunity of recognizing those individuals that had a greater level of education by allowing them some little leeways in the way that building inspections are done. And they agreed as though that was a win-win situation, that many times the kinds of things they were doing inspections on were very routine, and the sorts of things that people that had a lot of experience and education shouldn't have to worry about or shouldn't have to be necessarily inspected every step of the way. And so it was a way for them to use their resources in a fashion that would be a little bit better for the department, and a way for the master builders or those individuals who'd taken that step to move their process along a little bit faster. So we came together and developed the program. It was based on an educational component of about 30 hours of very specific code-related matters, and then another 6 to 10 hours of business kinds of things, accounting and legal kinds of issues. And at that time, we did start conversations with the Building Code Agency, and they also got on board seeing some of the advantages there. And so we agreed upon a curriculum. We agreed upon a series of issues that would be covered and that would be studied. We agreed upon a method of testing whereby they would do the testing. And I would just add that the test questions are drawn from the same body of test questions that are given to building officials and building inspectors. So it's not some sort of a fluff thing. It's a very specific thing based on the same kinds of issues that they deal with. So based on all of that, we were here 2 years ago, and you allowed us to develop the pilot program, which we did 4 years ago, developed the pilot program, which we did, have now graduated about 40 individuals who've gone all the way through and passed the test. A couple have moved off to the side, so those that actually graduated are the ones that we have certified as certified master builders. They are recognized both in the City of Salem jurisdiction and in the Marion County jurisdiction as such. I guess I would add that, interestingly enough, when we started the process, we thought that the speeded up inspections and the somewhat streamlined inspection process was going to be the big carrot. What we learned was that the carrot was the education, and that in fact we had a lot of people who said we really didn't know in depth what the code did contain, kind of like we didn't know how little we didn't know. And when they discovered all that, why, they were most appreciative of having the education and having the opportunity now to converse on a better equal basis with the building officials, with whom they sometimes had differences of opinion. Now they had a common way to go into the code, look at it, and make the determination, yes or no, this is the way it works or this is the way it doesn't work. In fact, it really doesn't even quite go that far anymore, because most often the certified master builder knows the code well enough that there's no reason to go ahead and do it wrong or to allow it to happen incorrectly. Just do it right the first time. That's a little bit easier. So again, the process is that that an individual applies to be a certified master builder. They're approved by the committee. They then take the education, and if they pass the class administered by the Building Codes Agency, they are then certified as a certified master builder. They can advertise as such. They can request, although as I mentioned, not many do, they can request an expedited process for getting their plans approved and for getting some inspections made. They can essentially say, I have certified that this particular function was completed, and so you don't have to come out. You can if you want to, but you don't have to come out and look at whether or not I got the nailing pattern right for the sheetrock or the insulation installed correctly. But most often, as I say, they don't even do that because they're happy enough knowing how to do it right that that seems to get the job done. So we are here to ask you today to allow us to drop the pilot aspect of the program, to allow it to go statewide with the understanding that it is voluntary on the part of both the jurisdictions that would be certifying master builders and, of course, voluntary on the part of individuals who would apply for it. Our intention is to promote the involvement of the builders on the consideration that they're going to be better equipped for it and that they're going to be better able to perform the functions that they have to perform. So we will be promoting and encouraging the widespread use of the training and the classroom training and the testing and the certification process, and thus approaching the jurisdiction saying, isn't this something that you want to participate in as well? So with that outline, I'd be happy, Mr. Chairman, to answer any questions that the committee has.
Questions from the committee? Then I'll jump at one. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none. Representative Beckman, do you have a question?
Nope. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
John Frazier from the Building Code Division.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joan Frazier, and I'm the Deputy Administrator of the Building Codes Division. Joe Brewer, our administrator, sends his regrets. He was unable to be here because of a previously scheduled meeting. As you probably are aware, the Building Codes Division adopts, administers, and enforces Oregon's statewide building code. I'm not going to get into a lot of detail because Mr. Berry and Mr. Moyer explained the bill, I think, very completely, and just want you to know that our division supports the concept of expanding the Master Builder program. We think it's been pretty successful, and we'd like to see it grow statewide. We, because of the timing of the bill and it came out so quickly, we haven't really had a chance to go through the bill with the proponents and other interested parties. We do have some concern with the language of the bill, and we would like to be able to work those out and come back to the committee with some modified language on this bill. If that meets your purposes. We also have a concern about the emergency clause at the end of the bill and how we would be able to set up a program and the jurisdictions that quickly. We appreciate your consideration of our testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? We could give you till 2:45. Would that work?
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I think this is the last bill, so. You need more time?
I'd like a little more time than that.
You need a little more time than that?
I'm going to ask a question, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Representative Bonner has a question.
On the $22 application fee, do they pay that before they take the test? And if they plunk, they pay it again? That's one question. The second is, does it cover your cost of administration?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, I don't really know the answers to your question. I do have with me Andrea Simmons, who was involved heavily in writing the rules, and I'm going to ask her to see if she can answer your question.
To the Chair, to Representative Zahner, for the record, my name is Andrea Simmons, Senior Policy Advisor for Building Codes Division. As far as whether or not the $22 covers our cost, I am unsure at this particular point in time. We have not analyzed that. The $22 is actually an existing fee for certification that the building codes administers, and it is a testing fee that is charged, and if you do fail the test, the person that failed the test would actually have to repay and pay the $22 again to retake.
And Scott says it covers it, so I trust him.
Any other questions? Representative Walker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Zahner alluded to what my question is going to be. In your testimony, Ms. Frazier, you say this bill will likely require additional resources for the division to implement. I'm assuming that means you need money. And we don't have a fiscal on that, and I think that alludes to whether the $22 will cover that.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, In our first review of the bill and going through it to try to get ready for today, it looked like it might require additional resources. In speaking with Mr. Berry and Mr. Moyer, we're not certain of that anymore, and that's part of why we need some time to go back and really analyze it.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Bill Cross?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Building Officials Association. Don Woodley, who is the building official from Marion County, could not be here, but he was one of the two building officials that participated in the pilot program. He has had a very positive experience with the program, and while few of the master builders have taken advantage of waiving some of the inspection requirements that would be permitted under the pilot program, it has increased the code awareness and the product that the builders have built and designed and built. And our association earlier this year went on record in support of this proposal. It is voluntary, so it would allow, as public building officials get more comfortable with how the concept and the programs worked, to voluntarily then participate in the program. We do have a couple questions about, there again, some language in the bill, and one of them goes to a couple of the questions raised a little bit earlier about the fee and whether that would cover the processing of an applicant, so to speak. And in the pilot project, the industry really pre-qualified who would be able to participate, and they did a lot of the sort of the kind of background verification of the business qualifications and solvency of the builder and that type of thing, so that they more or less kind of recommended who would be able to participate, and the building official was involved in that committee process and could more or less veto somebody who maybe they felt as a builder they didn't have a very good compliance record locally. But a lot of the kind of front-end work was done through the industry, and if that's possible to make sure that that occurs, obviously that will keep the fee down, and I'm not sure if that's the role that they want to continue to play in their local trade areas or not. But that's we have a couple questions of that nature that we, again, would like an opportunity to make sure that we are comfortable with the way it's presented, but otherwise, it's a good bill, and we'll be happy to support it because it's definitely made some very positive contributions to some situations where, frankly, it's a lot easier to get it done right the first time from both the builder and the inspection standpoint than having to go back. So we're here to support it and appreciate the committee's maybe indulgence in letting us kind of huddle with the sponsors and making sure we understand exactly what they want.
Any questions from the committee? Mr. Cross, how long do you think that process might take?
Well, 246 might be better than 245.
As I told you before, I will give you till 3 o'clock.
I know you're very...
So don't let it be said that I'm not generous with your time.
Well, it won't take us very long. We have a legislative committee meeting tomorrow, as it happens, and I do have some feedback already on the bill, and it is very, very minor, very nominal, but we could easily, by the end of this week, get our comments to the sponsors, and I don't think they're going to require, you know, much work.
Okay. Well, it would be my anticipation that if you guys can get your work fairly quickly and get some amendments drafted, maybe that will allow us to come to a consensus that will bring us back for a work session.
Very good.
Okay. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2012? Seeing no one, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2012. Is there anyone here to testify on House Bill 2225 having to do with property and parcel adjustments? No? Nobody wants to claim it, huh? Okay. We're going to keep going, and House Bill 2759, we'll open the public hearing.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2759, you heard previously on the 15th of February. This establishes a program of professional credentials for construction specialties, including lead-based paint contractors licensed by the Construction Contractors Board. The board would establish the standards, monitor continuing education requirements, and include credential information within the licensing record records it maintains for public notification.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, you also have an amendment on this bill to the dash one. This bill was scheduled for last week, and the amendment may have shown up in the members' hands at that time. We tried to include it in the packet so that everyone has a copy of it. It does some further definition.
Thank you. Let's call Matthew Moritz. And if you want to bring Linda with you, feel free.
Chairman Canope, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matthew Moritz. No need to reiterate our support for the bill itself. However, we would like to address the merits of the amendments, which are before you now.
We have met with the Construction Contractors Board, and we have agreed on these amendments. I believe that you were concerned about a fiscal impact, and that is addressed. We'd just like to, again, urge your support for this bill with these amendments.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee?
Yes.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My notes from February 15th indicate that we needed a fiscal, and I don't have one in my file. Does that mean I can get it?
Yes.
Actually, I found it. Sorry. I just didn't look deep enough. Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the fiscal statement was issued on the 22nd of February. I believe that it's been distributed to the members.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ben Fidel.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Ken Fidel. I'm the administrator of the Construction Contractors Board. Coming before you to testify in favor of the bill. We would propose that if this bill becomes law, that we first deal with the lead-based paint issue and figure out what the costs are going to be on this program. We've had some very good experience with our education program that became law last legislative session with efficiencies gained by using websites and using all the computer tools we have, and we believe if we can do that with these kinds of programs that we can keep that cost to a minimum and that there may never be a fiscal impact to this. However, after a year into this next legislative session and we find out that we've got too many credentials and too much cost, we may come back and say if we go further on this, we have a fiscal impact. The bill is permissive, and this legislation would allow us to deal with the lead-based paint issue now, and that's the important issue. It would allow us also to begin recognizing credentials and begin encouraging people to become more competent at what they do, and it's a good bill, and we support it.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My notes here, Mr. Fidel, indicate that the CCB wants you to stay away from additional duties, but you do strongly support this bill.
Members of the committee, that's correct. What we're attempting to do, the Construction Contractors Board, since its creation in 1990, when it went from Builders Board to Construction Contractors Board, has seen nothing but growth, and we keep trying to catch up. But this is an issue that needs to be faced, and we're the ones that should be facing it, so the board has gone on record as supporting this, and we would support it, and we can handle it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Mann from Goose Hollow Window Company Incorporated, general contractor.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Mann. I reside at 5215 Childs Road, River Grove. I am a general contractor. I'm starting my 21st year as a person in the construction industry, 14th as general contractor. I own Goose Hollow Window Company. My specialty is replacing windows and doors. In May of 98, I took the lead-based paint training. I stand for you as a very well-educated person, and I'm objecting to this bill, and I'd like you not to pass it on. What I've handed out to you is my testimony. I don't know, because I didn't know about the bill being dropped last when it was a lead-based paint booklet, and I'll go into some of that. House Bill 2759 changes the purpose of the regulatory agency, Construction Contractors Board, hereafter referred to as the CCB, and sets this government self-supporting agency onto a path of endorsing the quality of contractors. It is my belief that this bill will financially benefit and create state endorsement for contractors that belong to trade organizations and trade organization training programs in an unfair trade practice, and imply to the public quality and future work performance of such listed contractors that is out of proportion to the value of the said listing in the CCB's database, and uses the highly emotional and scary health issue of lead in pre-1978 housing as a vehicle for accomplishing this. Before I go any further, let me say that I'm not here knocking this bill as another let's not, you know, have government interference and the hell with consumer protection. It is not about contractors not stepping up to the plate or consumers not being protected, but rather an attempt to keep this particular government agency from being manipulated and used when it can make a significant contribution in the area of lead safety and consumer awareness with its existing power without clogging the system with statutes that are not needed and the resulting administrative rules that will follow. Currently, the CCB does not require lead activities training to be licensed. It does require lead abatement training for that activity alone. All new contractors as of July 1, 2000 are taking tests to be licensed, and I understand an environmental and lead hazards component is being incorporated into this new licensing program. I am hopeful of all, once all the standard training materials are completed, it will be made available to all the 45,000 plus contractors. The current lead activities approved HUD classes that have been offered have been predominantly through the Oregon Remodeler Association, I'm a member, and to the best of my knowledge have been completely full. 250 construction business owners have taken the approved training. That constitutes one half of 1% of all the contractors. The problem of HUD and state-approved formal education has to do with government coming to the plate with standards and rules with which contractors can perform to and classes in enough mass so all contractors can take them. The extreme minority that have had access to classes are those predominantly doing a HUD construction remodeling and members of the Oregon Remodelers Association. As the ORA has stepped to the plate and its national affiliate, the National Association of Remodeling Industry, with a sponsoring limited program access. The ORA is to be commended for applying it, you know, in this process of, right now the ORA is in the process of forming a for-profit company which will funnel its profits back to the Oregon Remodeling Association, which is a nonprofit. So I believe it should be suspect in having the CCB agency promote those who have taken the classes when the ORA is directly benefiting. The CCB response to this committee as regards impact is going along with limiting the CCB listing to dealing with lead and seeing how it goes. Well, there is no evaluative measure to see how it goes. If a contractor is listed as not having taken an official non-mandated class, the contents of which are now and will be available in many different forms to government agencies and publications, and I've included some of this information for you, it is a direct implication to the consumer that the contractors are not as qualified if they don't have this class, and the CCB says so. I will divert, I didn't write this in, but I personally have had to sever a business relationship with a contractor I encouraged to go through this program because he would not comply with my requirements to maintain this work environment in the way they should be. This person could be referred. There's no guarantee that these people who have taken these classes are going to do the consumer any good more than anyone else. The CCB's response to accept which trade groups qualify to their programs for voluntary contract improvement, not just the lead, this has to do with the amendments that you A1 saw before you, go along with the exclusion of many nonprofit and for-profit organizations that have or would create programs but would be excluded because of their current membership size. This certainly benefits existing trade organizations that have had a hard time maintaining membership. The Order and Modelers Association, its 48 years, has managed to maintain about 500 or fewer memberships, of which many aren't even contractors. It is my belief that the contractors would be pushed into joining these organizations just to get the initials behind their names. They would be taking training from which no third-party or state evaluation as to their quality has been taken place, and at the same time blocking the creation of new programs that may be just as valid. The CCB should not be endorsing these programs or trade organizations. The CCB has enough on its plate. It should be allowed to go after contractors harming consumers under binding contracts, individuals who are working in the construction industry who are not licensed, and promoting a cooperative attitude between contractors and the consumers and not playing favorites. The CCB indicates there would be minimal or no financial impact to list contractors that have taken lead activity training. However, a financial impact, even very small, diverts the CCB from its existing mandate, and there will be a financial impact. In business, we call it profit. For gains, the contractors who can use a multi-million dollar advertising machine with the power of endorsement by a simple existence, which is the CCB. The CCB suggests, to be fair, that contractors pay a fee to be listed, and this smacks of advertising, which of course it is. The other 45,000 plus contractors have not taken the training may be just as confident, but their dollars created the CCB as we see it today. So it is unlikely that those same contractors would be happy to subsidize the competition. The CCB has part of its mission statement, and I quote, to safeguard the consumer's right to related contracted improvements to real property while promoting a fair, equitable, and competitive environment in the construction industry. There is no other board that I have looked at, and I've been on a lot of them lately, including the physicians' boards that actually list any certification voluntary information. If it's there, it's because they have to do it, and it's part of their being licensed, not because they chose to take it. Right now, the federal government does not require any U.S. contractor mandated to take these courses except abatement. There's a lot of bubbling and churning going on about lead and contractors and state and federal enforcement of existing laws, including the current changes as of January 2001, and the most important will be coming up in August of this year. The fines for noncompliance on the books now are not being enforced, but they are very punitive. At the federal level, it has been recognized how hard it is to get hold of this issue, and the feds have held off as they've refined what they really want. As sad as it is to even see one child or person exposed to lead dust, the contractors who do not comply will also stand to lose everything they have. This is not a game, and contractors know it. We do not need House Bill 2759, but rather consumer and contractor information that is accurate, measurable, enforceable, and equally dispersed. As of right now, contractors are required to give every homeowner of pre-1970 housing a booklet called Protect Your Family from Lead in Your Home. That's the one I handed you right here, the blue one. Prior to work, starting and keeping the signatures on file for 3 years as per federal law, landlords and property managers are required to give them to tenants when they lease and any time they perform work that can create lead dust hazard. I'm also a landlord, I'm also part of the Multifamily Housing Council and Oregon Apartment Owners Association. I'm to tell you, they're taking it seriously, they're educating their members, and they know what to ask contractors. My suggestion to this committee is to influence the budget to allow the CCB to provide these federally mandated booklets for free to the contractors, as at present we, the contractors and landlords, pay for them. Contractors by statute have to provide the consumer notification, which I didn't include with this, at the time of work proposal and not at time of contract, that the CCB recently modified to include information about lead hazards in the home. This particular piece of paper encourages the homeowner to check up on us contractors to see if we're licensed. And if we don't give them that piece of paper, we don't have any legal recourse to go back and collect damages if we don't provide it. So my understanding is a high compliance. Now we're giving it at the time, not at the time of the contract signed. The Oregon Health Department has a fabulous website with extensive information on lead. And what I've done for you, if you'll look through, is I provided you with this next two pages contain information on lead sites. It talks about accreditation, certification, frequently asked questions, information for professional contractors, school maintenance directors, daycare providers, remodeling, lead disclosure requirements for property owners, renters, and real estate professionals, preventing lead-based poisoning in homes, lead hazards, et cetera. The next page also shows them where they have the actual information about the technical stuff, what you would be looking for on a contractor in your home. There's another publication which we aren't required to give out, but highly would recommend. It's just reducing the lead hazards when remodeling your home. Nowhere on the CCB website currently is this information listed. They could certainly network with the Department of Health and make it a cooperative effort for consumers and use our dollars wisely. The Health Department also links to all the other agencies, including the CCB, and that's also listed on the last page that shows you where other professionals and the consumer can get other information. The recommendations, obviously, I'm going to repeat, would be to encourage the CCB to continue its aggressive consumer awareness programs. Right now, it's not just the CCB coming to the plate. They're not the ones who are mandated, by the way. The EPA has mandated the health departments. We have our water bureaus who are dealing with water lead issues. The health department actually is the one who carries the ball. And I think they should work with them. And they have advertising programs they should coordinate with. And again, provide the monies to the CCB to do their job and to help us in ours. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you. Are there any questions? No?
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I lost the end of your testimony, so I don't have Ms. Mann. You seem to be objecting to this bill on a number of levels, and so I'm trying to sort out what your main objections are. You're saying that it would place an undue burden on contractors financially, but are you also saying that it would create some sort of false sense of protection for consumers, that people who had gotten this training and had a certification, that it wouldn't really benefit consumers, that contractors had gone through the training? I guess that second part is what I'm having trouble following, because it seems like, though I understand the burden argument.
That's why this is kind of slippery, because it took me a long time to, the ultimate long-term underneath it, Representative Rosenbaum, is that I believe it's an agenda of the trade organizations, and has been for many, many sessions, to try to get member certifications to the trade organizations listed, so that they can say this person is a certified remodeler, this person's a master builder, this person is this, and they're using the lead-based paint as a vehicle. I personally believe that anyone who gets education, the consumer should probably expect to see the benefit of that. It's a little misleading, however, to imply that because they have it, that they're in this formal, particular manner, only through the State or HUD program, which is extremely limited at this point in time, that the homeowner is going to get what they think they're paying for. It could be very misleading. I also think it goes against, it opens the door for an awful lot more that we've never let the construction board participate in, which is endorsement. It's getting it into a whole different arena besides enforcement and dealing with consumers at that level. If I, as a business owner, choose to take all these classes, I protect my business, I protect my family, I do the best job for my consumer. And I have the advantage because I do this and I promote it directly to the consumer that you should contract with me because this is who I am. And if you choose to contract with them, you're not going to get the same.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. It seems to me, though, that the bill does allow a number of different sources for the training, not just through a trade association. So can't quite see the argument that it's promoting trade association.
And it's not about the training. It is about using the CCB as a vehicle to explain the training or to isolate out the very tiny percentage of contractors that have actually taken it and will actually be able to take it at the way it's being offered now in the near future. and then there is no database search right now for the consumer to pick and choose those contractors. Let's say I call and this contractor's told me that they have taken the training. I go to the CCB and I say, does this person have the training? They say, yeah, they got the training. Then the other contractor they're using may not have had the training. Does, because they haven't had the training through this format, mean that they aren't as qualified to do the work? No, it doesn't. But there's no way for the consumer to find out all, to get three people who have taken the lead activities training to compete and compare against these prices.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2759? No?
Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2759. And I think we'll give the committee an opportunity to mull it over a little bit. Plus, few members are missing. So, we may bring it back at another date. Anybody here to testify on the House Bill 2225? Nobody yet, huh? Okay. Representative Morgan's bill. We do have some written testimony. We'll pass that to the committee. Representative Morgan is in Washington, D.C., apparently. And this is her bill. So we won't open a public hearing on it, but we'll look to bring it back at a later date, I think. You did? Okay. Department of Revenue does want to testify on it at some point, but probably won't be today because they are not here. Is that right? Okay. Anything else for the good of the committee? I believe we have exhausted our agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to clarify that you did not open a hearing on House Bill 2225, and we will bring the schedule it at some future date, we'll bring the testimony back and introduce it as a committee record at that time.
Thank you. Committee adjourned.
Thank you for that.